Wargaming Recon is proudly sponsored by 127games.com, home of the cheapest Access and Allies miniatures. Find them at 127games.com.
Welcome to Wargaming Recon. Wargaming Recon is the only member of the Troll in the Corner podcast network to discuss historical and New England gaming. This is episode 115. 1775, the game. I am your host, Jonathan J. Reinhardt. I want to welcome all of you to this episode of Wargaming Recon. If you're a longtime listener, you know the deal. But for all of you new people, Wargaming Recon is a twice-a-month podcast that talks about historical and New England gaming. This time around, we're going to be talking about a board game. So I'm going to run all of you through how you play it. I played it a few times. I'll give my thoughts. Then we'll move on to the mailbag section of the show, which this time is pretty long. Also have an announcement later on and some other tidbits to share. If you are interested in anything that I talk about on this episode, if you want to buy a copy of the game, perhaps, or you want to find out more about it, or just find out other stuff, or maybe leave some feedback, because feedback is awesome. It allows you to share your thoughts with me about this episode or anything I've done in the past. And I tend to share feedback on the air. So I pick randomly and I share some of that kind of stuff. So if you send me feedback, you are likely to get your feedback on the air, where I'll name you by name. First names only, though, so don't worry. So you can do all of that by finding and going to the show notes, and I make it easy for you. Show notes for this episode can be found at wargamingforums.com/WR115. That's right. wargamingforums.com/WR115. So without further ado, let's talk about 1775, the game. It's actually called 1775 Rebellion. It's by Academy Games. It's a beautiful board game. Big map, full color, high production values. And I was really interested in it because when I went to TotalCon this year, 2014, I went and I hung out in the vendor room a little bit and meandered over to one of my favorite vendors, the guys over at Crossroad Games. They're up in Maine. If you're ever in the Portland area, you have to check them out. They are just fantastic guys. Brendan and Jeremy, wonderful, know lots of stuff about a lot of games. Very friendly, no pressure. You go, you look and see what you want. They're happy to help you. And if you don't want anything, that's cool too. So Jeremy, knowing that I am a historical gamer, he's like, John, you should take a peek at this game called 1775. And turns out a buddy of his was involved with developing it. 1775 pits you, the gamer, in the role of a commander during the American Revolution, or War of American Independence, depending on where in the world you live. In the game, there are four main areas or groupings of people that you can command. You can either be a commander of the Continental Army, you can be a commander of the American militia, you can be a commander of the British Army, or of the British Loyalists. Now, there are other factions that kind of come into play, depending on how the game goes. For example, there are Native Americans on the board. They're there by default, but they're neutral until one of the other factions, one of the other four main factions, player-controlled factions, come in and take control of them. So you have to have one of your armies or units with them. And as soon as your last unit dies or moves away, those Native Americans become neutral. And let's say there's a combat. And let's say you are the British Army and you go and you have some Native Americans and you invade a province that has colonial militia, American militia in there. And all of your guys die for some reason, except those Native Americans. The American militia then says, hey guys, we're over here. We're friendly. You should like us, even though you just shot at us, but you should like us. And then those Native Americans become part of the American militia force, which is really interesting. And then on top of this, there's two other factions that only come into play as a result of cards or special happenings in the game. One is the French. Anyone who knows anything about the American Revolution, American War of Independence, knows that the French played a pivotal role in it for the Americans. So they come in, and of course they are on the side of the Americans, both the Continental Army and the American militia. And then you have the Hessians, who people probably famously know as a result of that famous painting of George Washington crossing the Delaware to go into Jersey and slaughter a bunch of Hessians and send the British Army packing. Hessians, kind of a misnomer. A whole episode of this was done on a great podcast that I highly recommend called Stuff You Missed in History Class. But basically, Hessians is a broad term used to describe Germanic mercenaries. But even that's not really accurate. I'm not going to get into it. But anyway, this faction comes into play. And of course, they are troops that can be used for the British side, whether you're loyalists or British Army. Doesn't really matter. The game is kind of like Risk, but more in depth. You have this map. You seed the map with units in different provinces. You use wooden pieces, predominantly colored cubes. Anyone who's played Pandemic will be familiar with what I mean. They're about the same size. So in some provinces, there are British Army, and in others, there's loyalists, and some there's Continental Infantry, and so forth. Each turn happens randomly. What I mean by this is that the turn takes off, but you don't know who's going to go first out of the four potential factions. This game can be played with as few as two people, or as many as four. I have played this twice. In the first game, I played with two other people. Actually, both games I played with two other people. So it was 2-on-1 each time. The one player controlled both factions of that side. So for example, let's say you are the one player. You're playing against two other guys. The two other people, they're doing the Americans. So one of them is the Continental Infantry and one is the American Militia, and you as a British control both the Loyalist and the British Army. But you don't know when your turn's going to be, right? Because that is something that's determined by chance. Each faction has a turn marker that goes into this little fabric bag, and someone pulls them out, or you can have one person who does it, or everyone can just kind of pull one. And whatever turn marker comes out, that is the person's turn. So, for example, maybe British Army goes first, then Continental Infantry, maybe American Militia goes next, and then the Loyalists. You never know. And in my experience, very few turns resulted in the same order for what's happening. In any given turn, you can do a few things, and you actually must do certain things. You have in your hand a hand of cards. You draw these, you have a certain number. When you go down below, you draw more, you have a discard deck, and you have your hand, which you can play cards from. You need to have movement cards in your hand. If you don't have any, you have to discard and draw up. You also have event cards that you can use. Every turn, you must move armies. Every card's different, so they have information on the card. It might say you can move up to 2 armies, 4 territories, 4 provinces. We can move 1 army, 2 territories. An army is composed of units. In the first time that I played this, it was very confusing what was and was not an army. The rules said things like armies and units, and we didn't really read the rules thoroughly, which was a problem. So we know that we played it incorrectly the first time. So we thought each individual cube represented an army, and that army and unit were synonymous. That's not true. You can take as many cubes, which are units, to form an army. You can take them from any faction on your side, but if you are, say, the British Army, and you are going to move an army of units, they have to at least contain 1 cube, 1 unit worth of your redcoats. So, for example, you can't say, well, I'm the British Army, and I'm going to move all loyalists just because I want them to die, and I want to keep my British Army troops in back because they are better than the loyalists, which they are. You can't do that. You'd have to have at least 1 loyalist. And that's the same for every faction. I'm sorry. Not 1 loyalist. 1 British infantry army. 1 British army unit. You'd have to have at least 1 of them with the loyalist. Or with Native Americans, depending on what you have. Or Hessians. Or... So every turn, you have to move. You play your movement card, and you move. And then you can also play up to, but no more than, 2 event cards. They can do all sorts of cool different things. One of them allows you to place extra units somewhere. There's one that allows the American side to place French units down in, I believe, Savannah. You can place up to 4. There's another one that allows Americans place up to 6 French into Newport, I believe. The British side has one that allows you to place Hessians into New York City, I believe, and things of that sort. So before you even start with your movement, which is important, but I'm going to back up a little bit. Before you even start, you get to deploy an additional 4 cubes, 4 units, as reinforcements. When you deploy units as reinforcements, there is, of course, a rule that covers this. And the first time played, we did it wrong. We thought it was you could put it anywhere that you had units in a province. So we were putting them all over the place, and that's not true. What the rule actually says is that you can place reinforcements into a province or territory that you control, but there are two requirements. One, you have to control the entire colony. Anyone who knows anything about American Revolution knows there were 13 colonies. Massachusetts, New York, Virginia, Georgia, and so forth. 13 colonies going up and down the eastern seaboard of the continental United States. In the map, these colonies mostly are broken up so that they are more than one territory, a little province or space. There are some exceptions, like Rhode Island is its own, but Massachusetts has three, for example. Virginia has many. It's just kind of all over the place. New York, many. Maine, many. Vermont, quite a few, and so forth. You get the picture. So you have to control the entire colony. And you control a colony by being the only side, and side here represents either British or Americans, regardless of faction, but the only side that has units in that colony. You cannot control Massachusetts if you have two territories that have your units in it, but then the other side has units in that third little territory, that third little space over there. So that's one requirement. And then the second requirement is the reinforcements have to be placed in a city. Colonies have these spaces. I call them territories, not to be confused with geographic territories or political territories, but territories, because the map is divided up into colonies, and those are divided up into sub-regions, which I'm calling territories. So the territory has to have a city in it. Using our example of Massachusetts, if you own Massachusetts, if you control it, and you want to place reinforcements in it, they have to be placed in the easternmost territory, which contains the city of Boston. You can't place them in the middle. You can't place them in the west. Same thing with, say, Virginia. You have to place them in the area that has a city. You can't place them all the way somewhere else. It has to be where the city is. And if you think about it, it makes sense, because you're not going to have a whole bunch of troops just randomly showing up in the wilderness somewhere and being like, hey, we came from HQ as reinforcements. Not going to happen. Or if you're the British, for example, those reinforcements had to come all the way from England, from the UK, come all the way across the pond, across the Atlantic Ocean, and go and land. And they're not just going to randomly show up somewhere deep in Canada or something. They're going to show up on the seaboard in a port town. So they're going to show up in one of those cities. It just makes sense. So if you follow those two things, you're golden. You put your reinforcements in there every turn. You get to put four units as reinforcements. And it's possible that as a result of previous turns, you might have units in the reinforcement area. Maybe they had fled a previous engagement. So these fled units also get placed. I'm referring them all as reinforcements, but they are distinctly separate in the rules. So those all get placed. They do not all need to be placed in the same area unless you happen to only control one colony in that one city. But if you control multiple colonies, you can spread them out. You can put one here, one there, a couple over here, whatever. That's perfectly fine. After you do that, then you do your movement by playing a movement card and moving the armies, which are composed of multiple units, or as many as you want, or as few, per those rules. And then you can move. And you could just say move them within territories you own, territories you control. Maybe you're just redistributing your forces to prepare for something. Or you can move into an enemy-controlled territory to attack, which is half the fun. And when you do, you roll dice. All the dice have different colors. The British Army dice look different than the ones for the Loyalists, for example. The reason for this is there are different probabilities of things. The dice have symbols on them. One represents a hit, which means you killed one unit of your opponent. One has a flee symbol, which means that one of your units flees for the battle, and then they get taken off and put into that special flee-fled unit area on the map. And then the third one is blank, which is considered a command decision. Now, the command decision is very interesting because it allows you to move one unit of that corresponding color out of the battle and into an adjacent territory that you control. If there are none that are adjacent that you control, then you can't do that. And you're thinking, well, how could this happen if I'm attacking? Well, think a second. Maybe you're defending and you're surrounded by your enemy. You can't command decision out, so then they have to stay. You may also choose to not use that command decision to move one of your units out. Maybe you want to stay in because maybe it's advantageous to you. Perfectly fine. It's not a requirement to move one out. You can choose to keep them in. Nothing wrong with that. Each of the different dice, there's certain dice for the British Army, certain dice for the French regulars, certain dice for the British Loyalists, and so forth. Each of them has different probabilities and ratios of which symbol they're going to get the most. The British regulars, which I've been calling British Army, but the British regulars and French regulars have the highest chance of getting a hit. They almost never flee, for example. And the most, they either hit or, I believe, a command decision and one or two flees, I think. Don't quote me on that. Anyway, you get the picture. So you do that, and then you draw up at the end into your hand to make sure you have the correct number of cards. And then we pull out a symbol, a turn marker from the fabric bag and see who goes next. And you keep on doing this and doing this and you go on. Well, how does the game end? How do you win? You win by controlling more colonies than your opponent. And there's one other really important requirement. You can't just be like, I control 7 colonies and you control 2, therefore I win. Well, no, because there has to be a trigger for that, okay? So I'm going to just back up a little bit. I've been talking about turns and what happened in turns. Since there are 4 factions, that means there are 4 turns. A turn for the British regulars, which I've been calling British Army. A turn for the British Loyalists, for the Continental Army, and for the American Militia. Once all 4 turns happen, you go through a round. At the end of the 3rd round, and at the end of every round following that, you're going to test to see if the game is over. Now, the game is over at the end of a round, from round 3 onward, where truce cards that belong to all factions of one or both sides have been played. So I talked about movement cards and event cards. Truce cards are a very particular and interesting type of card. They are technically a movement card, but they have this event aspect to them. They allow you to move some armies X number of distance and so forth. But what's really cool about them is when you play them, you're saying, my side is done fighting, so we're ready to come to the diplomatic table and talk a truce whenever you guys are. And so if another faction is like, I feel the same way, and then they play that, you're moving closer and closer towards peace negotiations. Now, the American side, for example, could be like, hey, the American militia is playing their truce card, and then, oh, look, the American Continental Army plays theirs. If they do that, and they can play them before round three, but if they do that on round 3, the game is over. It could also be that the American side plays their truce cards, and then the British side is like, we played one of ours too, or we played both of ours, and the game still ends. And then you determine who wins by who controls the most number of colonies. It is entirely possible for a game to end in a tie. You're thinking, how does it end in a tie? Well, it ends in a tie if both sides, the British side and the American side, control the same number of colonies. And in actuality, a tie is kind of a loss for both sides because the game designers have said, and I'm going to read this for you, okay? The game designers say, quote, the game is won by the side that controls the most colonies. Games can end in a tie. In case of a tie, neither side wins, and America becomes a southern province of French Canada. So I would say in that aspect, the Americans are like, whoa, we actually lose because we wanted our independence. And the British are saying, whoa, we lost because we wanted to keep these colonies. And our arch nemesis, the French, have taken control. Yes, that means the French win. I know some people are probably making jokes. Wait, don't the French flee? I'm not making fun of the French. Love the French. But that is what happens in the game. So like I said earlier in this episode, I had played a couple games of this, and the first game just totally messed up stuff. For example, I mentioned how messed up and got confused about what units meant, what armies meant. We're doing armies of single cubes, single units, thinking this isn't getting anywhere. And then it ended up finding out after that game, oh wait, we can have multiple cubes. And what benefit is there to that? Because you only have a finite number of dice of each type. So there's some strategy involved there of trying to maximize which colors you use, which faction type of units you want to send in, and you want to have in for defense, what you take for casualties, if you want to take, say, a loyalist over a British regular, or maybe you want to take a continental infantry instead of an American militia. There's all this kind of strategy involved. In the second playthrough, it was really interesting because we did a lot of this correctly, and I had printed out the rules. A buddy of mine actually owns the game and sent me a copy of the rules so that I could look it over and get more. And I printed them out, and I was like writing furiously all over it, making notations and underlining things and highlighting stuff. I was like, this is really important, and don't forget this. Oh, we messed up on that. Play extra close attention to this. So I had that out in front of us while we played. It went much smoother, and it was really interesting because this time around, I happened to be playing with two buddies, and it was 2-1. I was on the side with two. It was the Americans versus the British, of course, and I was the American Continental Army, and my other buddy was the American Militia, and then the other guy played both factions of the British side, the British Regulars and the Loyalists, and the game started off looking like, well, things are going exceedingly well for the American side. And so well, I thought, oh, when's the other shoe going to drop? Because my luck is never that good. Placing units all over the place and moving stuff around. There's a lot of fighting going on up in Maine and New Hampshire. Americans try to take that. And then we would try to do well down in the South and kind of had things going on. But the British had a stranglehold on New York City and on Jersey. And so we're like, oh, what are we going to do? And trying to deal with that, knowing that there's that threat. But meanwhile, the British kept on sending tons and tons of reinforcements up into Nova Scotia and kept on thinking, oh, this is not good, not good. A couple of the movement cards allow you to move your armies by sea. And if you are playing that on the Eastern Seaboard, you can basically take armies from whatever section, province, territory you have on the Eastern Seaboard, and you can go somewhere else entirely. And so you play the game like Risk in that you're getting all these armies together and you want to control areas, but you don't really want to leave any area uncontrolled. You could do that to still retain ownership or control of a colony. Let's say you are the only side that has units in the colony of Georgia, but you only actually have units in, say, a couple of the sections of that. You own Georgia. You own the colony of Georgia. But if you happen to leave one of the coastal areas free, the British could be like, ha-ha, we're going down from Nova Scotia, and look at that, we landed, now we can test Georgia, so you no longer own it. Well, wouldn't you know, that kind of stuff happened. A fair bit, actually. It caused us to lose colonies that we had, and it was really close for most of the game. We ended up losing a lot of colonies, and we tried some risky things, me more than others, because I knew the game was getting near the end, and I was the first person to play a truce card, mainly because it allowed me, I think, to move like four armies, one space, or something like that. And I was in a perfect spot to start moving a lot of stuff early on and take some colonies. I was like, I'm going to do it. I don't have anything else in my hand that will work. So I just want to do it and get it out there and go and take control. But in the back of my mind, I was thinking, oh, well, this will be interesting to see who else plays a truce card, because depending on who does and the timing of it, us Americans could win or we could lose, especially as things were slipping away and not doing so well for us. And it got to a point where it was close, but all we needed was for my compatriot to play a truce card. And what do you know? He ends up going through his entire deck and his last card in his deck. So by the time he got to play it, the game was going on and on. It was near the end. And things were looking bad. We were probably going to lose if we didn't do something really unique. So just kind of went crazy and figured we're not going to take any colonies. We couldn't. We weren't in a position with anything to move units anywhere to do that. But we could take control some colonies away from the British, such as Nova Scotia, all over there, up in Quebec and stuff. There were a couple spaces that we could move stuff in, and we didn't have to keep it for long, just had to keep it for, you know, a couple turns or a round, and all we had to do was just make sure that they didn't take it back. So we did that for a bunch of colonies, and by a bunch, I mean like, say, two or three, maybe four, and it was actually successful, enough so that by the time the game ended, I believe the score was something like, oh, geez, it was either 3-2 or like 6-5 where us Americans won and the British didn't, but it was really, really close. I was thinking it's more like that 3-2 or like, say, 4-3, something like that. And all the rest were contested. So it was a narrow, minor victory is what I would say. Because really, if you're fighting for your freedom, for your independence as Americans, and you're like, hey, we got three colonies and you British only control two, I think long term, things are not going to go so well, because maybe you're going to have this other section of people. Maybe France is going to be like, we don't want to support you anymore. We're just going to take these other ones. Or maybe the Hessians are like, forget you. We're done. We don't want your monies anymore. Or the Native Americans are like, we're just going to band together and form this coalition and get rid of you interlopers who've invaded our lands and tried saying that you own this. So I think long term, neither side was really going to do well. But for the purposes of the game, the Americans won. Yay! We got our freedom for our few colonies. So it was definitely a narrow or minor victory, but it was a lot of fun to play. Because of all of this stuff, actually, I was very, very excited. Actually, I should be completely honest. Halfway through the first game, I was like, I want this game. I need to buy it. And before we started playing, I thought, oh, you know, This is a game that we'll play maybe once, maybe twice, but not close together, and I don't think we're going to get really excited about it. We're playing it, and it's like, oh, I'm really into this game, and I didn't think I would be. I was just like, oh! And I'll go over, and like everyone else is having a blast with this game. And keep in mind, we were playing it wrong! We were doing things incorrectly. And even though we were messing up, and we knew we were for the first game, we really had a blast. And for me, that's what gaming and wargaming is about. It's about having fun with your friends. It's important to do other things, to have like painted models and have a nice looking table and be historically accurate and all this other kind of stuff. That's important. Don't get me wrong. But for me, if you're not having fun with the people you're gaming with, why are you even bothering? This is a hobby. You're supposed to be enjoying yourself. And we loved playing 1775, the board game. So after we played that first game, I couldn't stop thinking about it. I dreamed about it, which is really weird. I was like, oh, I need to play this game. I should buy this game. I don't know. Maybe I need to play it again before I buy it. So I was having like these inner monologue with myself for weeks. And then I was like, guys, anyone free? Can we play this game? And they're like, sure. So we played it again. I was like, yeah, I got to get this game. And then I talked about it on Facebook, because that's one of the cool things for those of you who don't know. We have a presence on Facebook. We also are on Twitter and some other social media websites. But on Facebook, I do a lot of the stuff where I will post, say, things that are going on as they're happening, which is great, because if you just listen to the podcast, it's wonderful, you get to hear about stuff, but usually you have to hear about it after it happens. Or maybe it's a bigger event and I'm going to talk about it beforehand. But usually, you can't hear about it really as it's happening. So I can be playing a game and take a photo and put it on Facebook, or I can tweet as I'm playing the game, hey, this is really cool, you guys should play, or whatever. So I had done that. And that actually leads us into the mailbag section, or part of it anyway, of the show. But before I do, I want to say that if you haven't played 1775 Rebellion, the board game, one, I highly recommend it. It is a blast. So much fun. It's very accessible. Make sure you read the rules first. But it's very accessible. It's a lot of fun. You don't need to be like a historian or a history major to like it. You don't even need to be a wargamer to like it. Obviously, if you enjoy any of those things, you will like it a lot more than if you weren't. But it's a lot of fun. It's a nice cooperative game. And it's a good introduction to the American War of Independence, the American Revolution. So if you want to get your own copy, of course, go to your friendly local game store. Love friendly local game stores. Go there and get it. But if you don't have one, or maybe you don't have one near you, or one that's not friendly, or if you just like to buy things online, Amazon always has it at a good price, and we have an affiliate link. So if you use our affiliate link, it is wargamingforums.com/1775game. That's wargamingforums.com/1775game. If you use that, you buy the game from Amazon, they send it to you and all that like normal. And then Amazon pays us a little bit for sending them some sales. And they're like, hey, thank you for sending us the business. We wouldn't have got the business otherwise. So they send us a little money. It costs you nothing. It costs Amazon a little something. But they can afford it, right? And so they send it our way. And that allows me to do cool things like get other games to talk about and share with you, and to go to conventions, or just to afford to be able to keep podcasts and paying for things like web hosting and, you know, bandwidth and all that sort of stuff and gear and everything. So that's my spiel about that. Now we move on to Mailbag. Mailbag is a cool part of the show where you get to hear what you have said. Yes, you, the listener. You get to hear whatever your feedback happened to be. And we don't share all the feedback, but I look at all pieces of feedback and I try to respond to every piece of feedback, every email or tweet or Facebook message, try to respond to all of that. And then I pick some of that and we'll put it in an episode and share it in the mailbag section. So I have a few bits of feedback to share with all of you this time. The first couple deal with 1775. And this is why I did that little preamble about Facebook. I was able to share on Facebook that I was playing 1775. Then I shared it the second time. I was like, this is really cool. And so because of that, some people who are in the community with you, who are listeners like you, or who have been guests on the show, were like, this is cool, and let's talk about the game. So one of them is actually a former guest and a really cool guy because of two things. One, he is an organizer for HuzzahCon. Huzzah is a fantastic historical minis and tabletop gaming, board gaming, but historical wargaming convention in Portland, Maine. Dean Emerson, wrote in, and he's also the owner of this cool store, the Brigadier's Bookshelf. So he wrote in on Facebook to say, quote, "I had a copy for sale at Huzzah, and someone snapped it up. I tried to order a second copy, but the distributor was out." So, Dean, first off, thank you very much for your comment on Facebook. I want to say how much I appreciate you taking the time to do that, and that I'm very excited someone grabbed your copy at Huzzah and that you got some money from it. So, folks, you can tell if his distributor was out, it might be hard to get, so hopefully your friendly local game store has it in stock, but if not, Amazon definitely does. Use that affiliate link. It'll be in the show notes. If you forget, don't worry. Go to the show notes and it'll be there. And then the second bit is from Aaron Bostian. Aaron is another really interesting guy. He's been on the show quite a bit as a guest, started off as a listener, and he is not an employee at his friendly local game store down in Virginia, but he's just one of those gamers who, like you, probably goes and organizes events there, and he's really helped to build a community of gamers down in his area. So he wrote on Facebook to say that he had his friendly local game store order him a copy because he was so excited by what I had to say about it. And now I have a little bit more of listener feedback from all of you. So back on episode 113, I talked about, it was actually really my response to a column by Sam Mustafa in an issue of Wargames Soldiers and Strategy magazine. And episode 113 was titled, "Are Painted Minis Essential to Miniatures Wargaming?" And so I kind of editorialized in there about whether or not they are and what circumstances. And I put that on Facebook and shared a link. And Wargame Soldiers and Strategy also has a Facebook presence. And so it got shared on there, and their community happened to interact with it. And I got emails and Facebook posts and all sorts of stuff. Overwhelming amount of feedback. So much of that I can't share it all here. But this episode generated probably the most amount of feedback that I can ever imagine, remember that had ever come in. Which was really the purpose of it. It's something I'm interested in and passionate about, but something I know that, even more importantly, all of you are deeply passionate about. Whether you should or should not paint models is brought up time and time again and causes lots of debate, arguments, discussion, conversation, all that kind of stuff. So overwhelmingly, people like very passionate about this issue, which is great. And I'm just going to highlight a few remarks. These, like I said, have come from the Wargame Soldiers and Strategy magazine Facebook page. On there, Sean said, quote, "Even if you only base coat your figures, I always maintain that they look far better than bare metal or plastic." Philip commented, "Definitely paint them, no matter how slowly." And finally, and I thought this was one of the funniest remarks from anyone who commented, and I don't think he meant it in a humorous way, and I'm not trying to denigrate the commenter of this, but Richard, who said that not painting minis, he compared not painting minis to, quote, "It's like buying a train set and only laying out the track on the living room carpet." I think that's just a great comparison. And if you haven't listened to episode 113, please do. I think you'll enjoy it and get you thinking about it. And if you have feedback about it, send it on in. Love to get your feedback. It would just be fantastic. So I have a few quick announcements before we close out this episode. The big news, which I can share with you, even though it's not yet public, but it will be shortly by the time you're listening to this, because this episode comes out on a very special Monday, okay, that pauses to build a little suspense. I am delighted to announce that I have brought back my other podcast, Geeks Explicitly! If you never heard of Geeks Explicitly, if you never listened to it, or you're a new listener, you have no idea what it is, here's my brief spiel about it. And I try to keep the two shows relatively separate because not everyone who likes Wargaming Recon will like Geeks Explicitly and vice versa. As the name suggests, Geeks Explicitly is an explicit podcast. It's not family friendly. It's not work safe. It's not something you should be listening to with your children. Wargaming Recon, I try to keep like PG, PG-13. So that way you could share it with the younger wargamer in your life. Geeks Explicitly is definitely for grown-ups, okay? They're swearing, adult situations, and things of that sort. It's not a show just to do those things, but if they come up, they come up and it happens. So Geeks Explicitly is a weekly podcast I do. It's kind of like a geek pop culture, geek life sort of thing where I talk about all that kind of stuff. I might have guests on. It's been famous, so to speak, for its top five lists. Many episodes of the show were a top five format. For example, might be like top five reasons why Star Wars is the best movie ever made, or, you know, something like that. So the show's back. I took a year off, which I didn't intend to do. Just kind of, it happens as time goes by. And then I brought it back. I explained why on that episode of Geeks Explicitly. If you are interested in listening to the show, and I would encourage you to give it a try, please head on over to trollitc.com/geekspodcast. Like I said, new episodes every Thursday. It's generally a shorter show than Wargaming Recon, about 20 minutes, half an hour tops, 15, 20 minutes usually on average. The episode coming out, my debut back episode, is longer. It's like a full-length Wargaming Recon episode, but that's just because I had a lot to say. The episode deals with the death of Optimus Prime in the 1986 animated classic Transformers the Movie. I know, I probably lost a lot of you already. So enough about that, but I wanted to just announce that that show's back. Encourage you to check it out. I'll have links in the show notes, don't worry. Now, two bits of information that you will definitely care about. So previously I mentioned that I had two guests confirmed coming up for future episodes of the show, and I am delighted to tell you that I have more information. First of all, Henry Hyde, editor of Miniature Wargames magazine, now with Battle Games, and also author of the Wargaming Compendium, will appear on the August 4, 2014 episode of Wargaming Recon, so be sure to tune in on August 4th, 2014, and download it then. He'll be talking about all sorts of stuff, and I just, Henry's great, because, first of all, he's very friendly, he's very gregarious, open and welcoming, he's very, very smart, very approachable, knows a lot about all sorts of stuff, but also because whenever I have a guest on, I really like the guest to do a lot of the talking. You can hear me any other day, right? But the guests, they're special, they're on for that episode. So Henry, I can just kind of wind him up, and I don't mean it in the British sense. I realized the other day I was speaking with someone who lives in the UK, and I was like, oh, I just wind him up, and they thought that meant like I was insulting him. No. Like I can, like, no, that's insulting too. I can give him a subject and be like, Henry, what do you think about whatever? And then Henry is so knowledgeable, so smart, so friendly, so used to public speaking that he can then talk for 2 hours about whatever I said at the beginning, which is fantastic because not only do I get to interact with them, but I get to appreciate it like you do as a listener. So I love that. So Henry will be on August 4, 2014, and that is going to be episode 119. And then even before that, on June 23rd, episode 116, I'm delighted to say that Stephen McLaughlin, who is the head honcho of WWPD.net and formerly of Battlefront Miniatures, will be the guest for the episode. WWPD talks a lot about Flames of War, and they've also been getting into Saga by Gripping Beast, so they cover that as well, and they have all sorts of other things that happen. So he's going to come on and talk about all sorts of cool stuff, so that'll be on June 23rd. Okay, folks, well, like I said, those are the upcoming announcements. Please remember the show notes for this episode, wargamingforums.com/WR115, has links to everything. It'll have links to our episode guide, so you can find out what's coming up. It'll have links to how you can buy 1775, the board game on Amazon, to the Geeks Explicitly podcast, and also have links to how you can get in touch for feedback. We're on Facebook, wargamingforums.com/Facebook. We're on Twitter, wargamingforums.com/tweet. Or you can email cwfgamecast@wargamingforums.com. You don't need to remember any of that. Just remember the show note URL, wargamingforums.com/WR115. That has everything you need. So we will be back next time on June 23rd, 2014 with the next episode. And I'm going to be talking about whatever Steven decides he wants to is really what it's going to be. So that's June 23rd. Until then, you guys know the drill. I hope that you've enjoyed this episode. If you're a longtime listener, thank you for continuing to come back and download and subscribe on iTunes and get via RSS or Stitcher or whatever, however you find us. Thank you. And if you're a new listener, thank you for sticking with us this entire show. Hope you come back for more gaming goodness, more wargaming goodness here at Wargaming Recon. So that's about all I got. And as always, you know it. No matter what's going on in your life, no matter how busy you are, no matter how many times you get called in to work overtime and you didn't really want to, no matter how little sleep you got, just no matter what, you gotta keep on gaming.
This is Andreas, Apprentice of the White Order. I would like to invite you to listen to my letters, a humble collection of my observations of the various beautiful and very, very dangerous creatures that inhabit my world. I hope you enjoy it as part of the Monsters of the Shattered World on Troll in the Corner at trollitc.com.
Geeks Explicitly. New episodes coming at you every Thursday. Talking about geek life. If you don't listen to Geeks Explicitly, then only at trollitc.com.
Hey there, this is Ben Gerber from Troll in the Corner, and I'd like to invite you to listen to my podcast, Indie Talks. Indie Talks is a discussion about independent publishing, where we take a look at indie games, the people who write them, and the people who play them. We're going to branch a little farther afield as well and talk to some independent television and movie stars and creators, as well as crafters, all of who are related to gaming in some way, shape, or form. So please join me on the Troll in the Corner Network at trollitc.com and give Indie Talks a listen.
Wargaming Recon is proudly sponsored by 127games.com, home of the cheapest Access and Allies miniatures. Find them at 127games.com.
Are you always on the go? Why not take Wargaming Recon with you? If you use an app like Pocket Casts, you can listen to your favorite episodes of Wargaming Recon and all of the other podcasts that you know and love. Or you can always stream and download the latest episode of Wargaming Recon by heading on over to the show notes for that episode.
Wargaming Recon is a proud member of the Troll in the Corner podcast network. Visit www.trollitc.com for more information. This recording is released under a Creative Commons Attribution Non-Commercial Share-Alike 3.0 license. Look for Wargaming Recon online at www.wargamingforums.com. We're also on Twitter, Facebook, and Stitcher Radio. You can learn more about this episode by reading the show notes on our blog. Many thanks to Andrew and Court for inspiring the show's name. Thank you for listening, and keep on gaming.
When I woke up hungover again, and I vow right now it's the last time I give in. So to commemorate, I'll go out and tie one on. I guess I'll quit drinking when you're gone. If I put off till tomorrow what I wanted yesterday, I'll just sit here till the future come and slap me in the face. If I don't change my direction and I float out here in space, then you can't say that I've ever lost my way. Well, I finally gave up smoking too. At least I thought that's what I told myself I'd do. Then in a cloud of smoke, my car moved to L.A. And my girlfriend got towed away. Well, if I put off till tomorrow what I wanted yesterday, come on, I'll just sit here till the future come and slap me in the face. If I don't change my direction and I float out here in space, then you can't say that I've ever lost my way. Do Well, I'm tired of being a whipping boy, and I'm tired of being fortune's favorite toy. So when the sun comes up, well, I'll grab it with both hands. Lord knows I need a change of plans. And if I put off tomorrow what I wanted yesterday, I'll just sit here till the future come and slap me in the face. If I don't change my direction and I float out here in space, then you can't say that I've ever lost my way. Then you can't say that I've ever lost my way.